Welcome back to Beholder to No One, a TTRPG podcast. Today, I'm here with Mike from Tales of Asperon. Yellow.
Hello.
Hi there.
Mike is awesome.
I hope everyone's having fun listening.
You should go check out both of his shows, Tales of Asperon, or Aspirin, like I used to call it, and Gilded Lily. Both are very good.
I guess it does make headaches go away. That could be a good tagline for the future.
Yes. Tales of Asperon. We make headaches go away. And then people are really going to start calling it aspirin.
It'll stick. We'll have to make merch. It'll be a whole thing.
Make a pill. Tales of Aspirin.
Just sugar pills, though.
Obviously. Okay, so today we are here to talk about, we're redoing an old episode, which was building a town from scratch. But we're going to give you the tools to do this for yourself by pretty much going through what methods we would do to kind of build a town if we needed to build one, and maybe do like one piece of it, because honestly, the best way to do it is to slowly flesh it out over time as you need it, in my opinion. But sometimes you need to have some of that stuff fleshed out ahead of time for, like, what if it's an open world and you don't know where they're going to go, a sandbox system. So sometimes it's just good to have a little bit of details written down and things planned ahead. I like random tables, personally. That's my favorite way to plan things. So what is your experience with building towns?
Ooh, that's a good question. I guess I have so many different games. I know when I first started out, it was a challenge, like, you know, not making them all feel really, really samey. Because, like, you know, oh, every, you know, this town has a tavern, and this one has, you know,
a tavern,
an apothecary, and this one has a different tavern that it also has, like, a stacked stone foundation and wooden walls and two windows and a door in the middle, and there's a bar keep with a slightly different name than the first one. It's like when I first started DMing, it was like a Pokemon where you like meet the same Nurse Joy with a different hat over and over again.
The other thing is kind of like when you're playing in person specifically, or if you're playing online and you like to have maps, you only can find so many maps to use if you're not stealing from other people, at least. Which I don't condone stealing if you're using this for a podcast or stream setting, because that's bad. But pay for all your things. Just saying, there's free stuff online that you can use, or you can pay like $5 to somebody who makes maps on a Patreon and get like hundreds and hundreds of freaking maps. But if I only have one tavern, I'll use the same tavern.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, like if one thing, keep in mind, like if you're world building or like city building and you're like running two separate games of people who don't talk to each other, by all means, recycle those places.
Just make sure you take notes to make sure.
Yeah, yeah. And if your players ask why, they might, like, if they happen to do communicate, and they're like, hey, wait, I went to a Barnaby's. You went to a Barnaby's? It's like, all right, it's fine. It's a franchise.
Everything's like, a franchise.
Yeah, there's like a lot to be said of like making a cool thing and then being able to stick it in different places too. You don't have to be like dedicated to, actually, this is probably a good point, is like I've learned that no matter what I build, try and be as vague and as like least detailed as possible, because there's always a chance that your players will just like skip out of town and then you lose everything you built.
Honestly, so the first episode of this that I had done back in, I don't know, April?
Mm-hmm.
May. I think it was the last episode I uploaded before taking a two-month break. It was built for my game that I was running at that time. And they did. They just got on the ship and left. And I'm like, for fuck's sake. Do you know how long I spent on this?
Yeah,
I fleshed out NPCs for you.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's that kind of combativeness where you're like, guys, I told you this is sandboxy and railroaded, but like, you know, there's a whole city right here. I promise it's cool.
Well, the next city, I literally said, I'm like, guys, we're staying here for at least 4 months in game. You're building friendships here. We're not going anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And like that's a good point too. Is like, I mean, that just to start off at the gate with like world building, town building, city building, any kind of place that's big and dedicated and is very detail rich, like it's totally fair to be upfront with your players and just be like, hey, look, I want to run a game. I want it to be in this kind of place. You can go on the outskirts of this kind of place, but like, there's an expectation. You can set that expectation from the beginning and no one's going to be mad about it. I mean, your players would be like, oh, cool. So this is like an urban fantasy and we're not leaving the city.
Awesome. Dragon Heist.
Yeah, right, exactly. There. Like Dragon Heist. There's an entire campaign about never leaving the city.
Yeah. Clearlight, we was mostly based in the city. We left the city, but we're just like, no, we want to go back, please. Thank you. We would like to go back inside the walls now. It's scary out here.
Yeah. Little backtracking on topic, but speaking of maps, there's a tool that I tend to use for inspiration fairly often. I posted it in our discussion, and you can probably link to it in the episode, but it's this random map generator by someone called Wadaboo. And it's like one of those...
W-A-T-A-B-O-U.
Yes, it's one of those itch.io websites. But what it basically does is, like, it gives you a set of parameters. And, like, these parameters can be, like... you can choose, like, rivers, farms, urban, like, rural. You can specifically tell this generator to, you know, leave out the shanty towns at the edges of cities that normally prop up outside like walls. You can tell it to do walls. And then when you click a button, it will just make a random map. And then there's like vector points that you can use to nudge the map a little bit. But like you can just keep clicking it until you find a shape that's pretty. And then like, okay, this is going to be my city map for a while. And then you can kind of nudge it. But it's like a really great springboard, especially if you're very like detailed map oriented.
I've seen this one before and I really do like it. And I like that it has a couple of different types of styles, because the one that you see in the preview isn't my favorite style of map. But the other version that they have, the Oakwall Port one they have in their description, I don't know what style that's called personally.
Oh, I see it. Yeah, that one. It looks very it looks very much like a topographical illustration.
Yes. I personally love that style when it comes to like a map, because it looks to me more realistic. It looks like it's actually what has been drawn out on a map in a game.
And for players or like the world builders too, it even has functions that like when I first started using it, you would just get kind of like the shape of the houses and the neighborhoods, like the house blocks and things like that. But like nowadays it's gotten good enough that like it can randomly generate neighborhood names for you as inspiration. Like you don't have to use them, but again, it's like a very good springboarding tool. I have kind of like a process I go through sometimes when I'm building towns, but like I guess it depends on like game to game.
I want to say that you can warp this. So if you want something specific, like you want like a big circle in the middle of town, you can move the city around.
I don't know how the back end of it works, but it's like all these little neighborhoods have little like anchor pins and stuff you can move around and like shift things to kind of like sculpt this little town and then use that. I mean, the random generation is good enough that you absolutely can just use it straight up and your players will love it. Mine have. At one point I took one of these maps, gave it a different color palette, and then drew on some like green symbols. And I was just like, hey guys, you found this map on a courier that dropped it as he was running away. And then someone did an arcana check and they found secret thieves cant symbols on the map. So they translate very well to that kind of thing too.
That's cool. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're fine. We're just talking. It's how conversations be.
Yes, I love these styles. The other style, if you don't want to go this route, I've seen this online and you can probably Google it, but it's like dice map system, where you just take a handful of dice and decide what each of them are and just throw them on a piece of paper.
Yeah, I've seen that. That can make some pretty wild-looking maps.
Yep, it's It was a really interesting map style because it's like all the groups are land, and then like the D20s are capital city or main cities, and then like D12s are smaller villages, and everything has like a list, and then you just add terrain.
This is like a different little off-topic thing, but if at any point you want to do a like, if you're looking to do like a map making conversation, I don't know if you've seen her work, but Power Word FU on Twitter. She's she plays Yuana in our games, but she does like cartography as kind of like a freelance thing, like yes. commissions. And oh my God, she is so good at making maps. And she has like a lot of background in actual like city planning and building. I know she did a commission for somebody that was like a mega city that was like 10 different. She had to map out each individual district and then tie them all together.
She was actually in our Ex Novo game.
Oh yeah, she was telling me about that.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. It was very weird, but it was a lot of fun. But yeah, I'll put her information down below too. So if you do want to make a map, but you don't want to create the map yourself because you're like, I'm not artistic enough for this, these things aren't working, just go hire her.
Yeah, just like she really likes it if you just kind of feel like, I kind of want this, this, and this. And then her work's great. I don't know if she's still accepting commissions currently, but hey.
You could follow her until she
follow her anyway. Let me look here. I have some. Oh, go ahead.
So once you have your map, or there's another way to do this too. You can just start with one building and work your way out.
Oh, yep.
So personal advertisement insert here. That's what we're doing in the new YouTube channel that Beholder to No One is running. It's on the YouTube, Beholder to No One YouTube, but we're building a world called Loros. And the beginning of every town is going to be a wizard tower. Every single town will start with a wizard tower. It doesn't mean that the wizard tower is in the town. It could be near the town, but we will start with that wizard tower and then flesh out from there to see what else is in that city. And based off how the people respond and react to the tower will depend on how far away it is, if things are celebrated, if it's like the center of the town, if it's like 10 miles away and guarded and protected or whatever.
That's so. Very cool to like, because that's something I've never occurred to me trying, because like this idea of building one central thing in every town that's almost consistent. Like the shitposter part of me wants to be like, yeah, that wizard tower is a high fantasy 7-Eleven and it's there in every single town. But like there's a pretty cool world building thing is like, well, where did all these single buildings come from? Like, why are they there? And then like just that question alone can springboard you into something new and something cool for like every location.
I would tell you, but spoilers?
No, that's fine. That was a question for the listener.
No, I know. But yeah, those are things that you can do. So you could start with just a tavern or just the player's home, maybe, or just a monastery or a temple or an orphanage or a castle. Like, there's thousands of options that you could pick from.
You just have to start, like, somewhere. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be arbitrary about it. So, like, one thing I tend to do, I have a couple different methods for world build, like, place building, I'll say, that depends very much on, you know, my audience, be it, you know, podcast related or, like, my home games or just, like, you know, running a game at a convention for people that I'd all strangers. Mm-hmm. Every approach is kind of different because you have to consider your audience. Like, I know my home game players really love for like the places they go to feel like they kind of have a theme. So like we recently approached one town that I had built called Big Shoulders, and it's this small little town built on either side of a river, and there's just a bunch of bridges that go across. But I know my players really were like craving 1920s themed stuff, so like that town started with an NPC that I built called like the Platinum Baron, and mm-hmm. he ran a casino in town, and a bunch of businesses were fronts along this river town. And I was like, okay, well, 1920s, cool. There's a crime boss in charge. Cool. Now the town is constantly misty. And then I was like, you know, there's a low mist hanging everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then that brought another question, which, you know, why is the mist there? Okay, it's low elevation. Gets lots of sunlight, super humid. It rains a lot. Boom. Now you got that. And like, I would start with the NPC, build him out, and then step it out as like questions. And then I've had other ones that are like super detail oriented where I like was like, I just want to build this place because it's going to be fun to build. And I don't really care if my players, you know, dig into everything. So like, I spent time building out like different shops, neighborhoods, random tables. And my players probably spent 2 sessions there.
I was playing a city building game. I say was because I accidentally purposely turned it into an astral plane game instead. So it's no longer city building, but there's a city building game called, or guide called Baldur's Guide to Kingdom Making, I think.
Ooh.
Hold on, actually, let me verify. Because I have it. I just forget the name of it. D&D. Baldrin's Guide to Kingdom Building. And it's made by the same people, I believe, who made the Elfin and Orc Had a Little Baby book.
That title is also a choice.
Which is also a fantastic book, by the way, if you ever want mixed, any race mix combo. But, off topic. So Baldrin's Guide. You can literally build a character sheet for your city, and the point of it is that you could have like wars and you could have like fights with other kingdoms if you wanted to. So our original purpose was we were going to build a city from scratch, from nothing, and slowly build it up and up and up and up until it got to this metropolis level, which takes years of in-game time. So we were doing quarterly type thing. So we would do like a quest to build a building, a downtime month, and then like side quests for like extra money, and then that would be a quarter, and then they would have a new building, rent and repeat.
Oh wow, that sounds really fun. That's like a very different take on, I mean, because that's a cool way to gamify world building in a sense of like actually engaging with your players, because like A lot of times, you know, I've encountered this a lot with my players in tabletop. I mean, it's very prevalent in D&D just because the way, you know, the Dungeon Master, you know, mantle is assumed. But like the players a lot of the time just assume like, oh, this is the DM's world. They're the storyteller. This is their story. And I'm just a player. And that's it. But like, involving your players in the world building is like a great way to get them invested like that. Like, it's so cool to me that you're running a game where like your players are like, oh, we would really, really, really love to have a community outreach center that focuses on this, this, and this. And then the players just find a way to build it.
Well, honestly, that's pretty much what happened. So they started with a hall, and then I gave them 3 descriptors, and they picked what their base house looked like, which I didn't give them like the details of what bonuses they would get depending on which houses. I just gave them the descriptions of the houses, and they decided which fit best for their town. And then things like one time they built a cemetery because they lost a player. So instead of building something else, they decided it was more theme appropriate to build a cemetery instead of what they were going to build. And I created a story for how they could get that cemetery built. But I also had them build the other main cities of the town by just asking 5 questions. Well, maybe 6. What is the name of this town? Like, I pointed where it was on the map. I already had a generic map provided. And I said, there's a town to the north on the left side of this port entrance on the sea. What is the name of that city? And I just went down the list of people in the group. And then the next person, what are the 3 main races that live here? The first city we built, Arakokra, dwarves, and tabaxi was their answer. So I had to find a way to make that work.
Oh yeah, especially from like a D&D kind of standpoint where like it's very, the cultures are very kind of like subdivided, unless you're in like a kind of crazy, like, sorry, mm-hmm. crazy is a bad word. Unless you're in a, you know, well-developed metropolis.
Right. Exactly. So then I asked.
I love that you could like, again, I just want to say, I love that you're like making them do the world building. I'm a huge fan of flipping the script on the players. Cause
oh, yeah,
like the first time you do it, they panic. They don't know what to do.
And then I asked them, what is the main import? What is the main export? And what kind of government do they have? So those were the five or six, I don't remember the questions I had, but those were the questions I asked for two or three cities, I think, maybe four. So I actually built the city out using the Baldrin's Guide to Kingdom Building, following those steps. So I was kind of playing with it, and I'm like, okay, so we have Aarakocra, we have dwarves, we have Tabaxis. Now, which one was first? Somebody was first. Because I have to, I'm trying to decide, like, what kind of houses do they have? So I decided that the Aarakocra were first, and they built an Aarakocra hatchery on top of a cliffside next to the water. Like, oh, it's okay. About 300 feet from the water, but it's close enough to the sea that they still feel the ocean breeze. They can fly down. They made it a plutocracy, which is money. The richest person is the one in charge. So the...
Danger
zone. Which ironically, I rolled for them that they liked collecting shiny objects, which was very fitting. So the Aarakocra would go down, sweep down, and steal stuff from passerbys and collect these shiny things, and then go back on top of their cliff where people couldn't reach them. And I'm building out the city, building by building by building, and then eventually I decided the dwarves come. And the dwarves come and they've built a little mini village at the base of the river to build a fishing mm-hmm. village. So they start building like a tavern and a fishing dock and a bakery and things that the dwarves would want. And eventually they build a fish market and make an agreement with the Aarakocra saying, if you don't steal our shinies, we will give you food. And so they reached an agreement to live harmoniously together by exchanging food for lack of theft, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kept building, they kept building, they kept building. And then the Tabaxis came and brought along the more fun environment of like, kind of like Romanian culture style where they were very fun and like maybe Romanian, but like also like circusy kind of vibe. Where they brought a bazaar and they brought fortune telling and they brought fun items that were exotic from other lands and these fun festivals that they didn't have before. So then we started adding all these fun increments. And then somewhere along the lines, people started realizing like the Tabaxis and the Aarakocra like shiny things. And there's a city across the bay that's run by a dragon. They have shiny things. So they started building weapons to see if they could. On one hand, people were like, well, what if they come to take ours? And on the other, they're like, well, what if we go take theirs? And it became this thing where the city just slowly flushed itself out just by building each building. And
yeah, and it's like,
this is amazing.
I love too that like as it's built out, like, so this is something that usually doesn't occur to me super often. Because usually, like, for me, the sources of conflict come from specific players and agents, not players mm-hmm. as in player characters. I mean, like, NPCs, characters that live in this place that you're making. Mm-hmm. Like, when it comes to conflict, I'll create a bunch of like important characters that live here, but like, when their ideals clash, that's when I identify conflict. But like, you have that method kind of from the ground up, you're identifying conflict based on resources, which is like something very real that does happen.
Yeah. And like, this city was built X amount of years ago. So I'm just trying to build like, what is their history until this point? Mm-hmm. And then what happens from here on out is up to the players.
So when you build history, like the history, do you have any kind of structured approach to it? You kind of hit on something that I was like considering talking about, which is like when I world build, it's kind of like a combination of the snowflake method and like a game of questions.
I like the game of questions option. I kind of think about what I want out of it and where they're at now. So mm-hmm. like for another city that I built that I did not use the Baldrin's Guide for, I was like, well, what if this city is more like the stereotypical Red Market district and it's broken up into crime areas run by crime bosses, but each person has their own set type of crime. Like one is sex work, one sells drugs, one does black market stuff, one does something worse. Like mm-hmm. every person does their own thing and they don't step on each other's toes because they have a mutual understanding. And then I've had that mindset and I kind of fleshed out like, oh, how did we get to this point? What mm-hmm. happened to get here? And I didn't do this alone. That's kind of my biggest thing is I love to build with other people because you get so much better ideas because you're like, wait, what if? And then you like kind of bounce off of each other.
No matter what you write down, like other people who have like an equal level of excitement in like world building will come up with something better than what you did, no matter what. Like every single time, it's always constructive. Like you'll build on each other, you know, in the same way, like all places that are made are like a conglomerate of a bunch of people.
Yes.
And like when I say I combine like the questions game with the snowflake method, usually when I'm like pitching the idea of a place, I'll write down a sentence about it. And then I'll ask myself a question about that sentence. And then I'll answer it mm-hmm. and then repeat. And eventually, it sounds kind of, it's weird that it doesn't feel like it's goal-oriented, but like, that's how most of my places start. They start off with a single core concept that's thematic, mm-hmm. and then we snowflake out by asking questions. So like, the largest city in Esperon, which is where a good portion of our pirate show has taken place, is called New Bismuth. It's this huge metropolis with these kind of segmented districts with obsidian walls perched on top of a hill that is coastal. And then there's like a cavern underneath that hill that opens up to the bay. Mm-hmm. And like when I made that city, the first thing that I was like, I want there to be magic schools to the point where it's almost like a metropolis that has colleges literally everywhere. There's so many colleges that there are scam colleges making money by not teaching people anything. And then I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And then my question was, you know, okay, well, if there's that many places teaching magic, what do mages do once they get out of school? And I was like, okay, well, there'd be a lot of mages who aren't super powerful, but they have useful skills that like would excel at trade work. Mm-hmm. For example, like a wizard who is really, really good at just weight manipulation, like in D&D terms, spells like Featherfall and like, you know, Tesner's Floating Disc and mm-hmm. like Levitate, like spells that normally players playing wizards or sorcerers won't pick those spells because like, that's kind of niche and boring. But I'm like, I'm seeing a construction mage standing on the corner. Wearing a pointy orange hat and a little vest with like reflectors on it. And he's standing there making sure the construction workers don't die when something goes wrong or just like helping them lift stuff up. And then I was like, okay, well, if there are that many wizards, there's probably a guild of like trades wizards. And it's like, okay, well, that whole guild exists. And then that's a whole figment of this city that I just made mostly because I was like, pointy hat construction wizards sound cool. And then like once you've hit a dead end on your questions chain, you just go right back to the beginning concept and find a new core question. And like again, back to the school.
There are tons of imagined a social worker wizard that uses their abilities to cast the houses to just house the homeless every night.
Yeah, see, and like that's not something that ever written in my notes, and you might hear me quickly writing it down. but like that's the exact kind of thing that I'm talking about. Like you just you came up with an idea and to harp on like having somebody else world build with you. Boom. Mm-hmm. Like you just came up with something that I wouldn't have thought of at all. Cause my next thing was like, okay, there's magic everywhere. That means this big metropolis is full of adventurers. And I was like, okay, well, what would a city be like if there's like an adventuring party every three blocks looking to make their name? And I was like, yeah. Well, now we have to have an adventurers guild. And it's like, okay, well, how does the guild make money? Ooh, what if the guild sponsors like an adventuring competition every year? And adventurers compete for a prize. And then like that prize gets them like name recognition in the city. And then like, you know, it's spiraled out to eventually becoming this like every 5 months, a 5 or 6 groups of adventurers who have been sponsored by merchants in the city or like people in the city that have capital, like shop owners or like people who are like, hey, I'll give you this cool magic hammer if you all guys wear t-shirts that got my logo on it. And they like delve into this living maze beneath the city to find a prize that the adventuring guild has put down there from all the fees that they've been collecting over the past couple months. And then like when that plot chain hits or when that questions chain hits an end, just round back to the beginning, find something else. Or if you find something in that questions chain that you enjoy, pluck that out and start asking questions. And eventually you build this kind of giant, really gnarly looking snowflake of this cool place you're making.
Yeah, I really like that idea. And I think I've used it without actually calling it anything. Mm-hmm. I know that in my prior home game, I started them in a coliseum of sorts. And like, I didn't really branch out that place very much because I had semi-railroad it a little bit to get them to another city. And then once they got to that city, that was where they could make the decision of what they wanted to do. But that other city, I started with, there's someone who's very powerful who wants them to help her with something. What is that something? Why is she powerful? How is she powerful? And like, she was powerful because she had an army of were-creatures. Okay, well, who is she powerful over? Like, the were-creatures could easily overpower her. So does she have magic? Yes, she has magic. Okay. What kind of race is she? She's a elf. Okay. Wait.
And it's like, how long has she lived? Like, has she always been here?
Exactly. And it also ended up leading to this particular town. Like, what I wanted was I wanted them to understand that she wasn't a good person fairly quickly into the game, because she was offering them comfort, money, safety, and food in a world that there was none, in a world that was near impossible to survive outside of a city on your own, in a world that's been destroyed by wars of gods over the last 300 years. So I'm like, okay, so she's not a good person, but she's helping them. So she's offering them all these wonderful things. And then she sends them on a mission. And in this mission, they're just told, someone's running a coup against me. I want you to find out more. So they go undercover down to the other part of the city, where they only see halflings, gnomes, dwarves living. They don't see any half-elves, humans, or elves in this part of the city. They all live in the richer part of the city. And they see these people all looking tired and run down and wearing dirty clothes. And they start to befriend them, trying to get information about this job. And they realize that they're not getting enough food.
It's that gif.
They can't grow any.
Yeah, it's that gif. Are we the we have skulls on our hats. Are we the bad guys?
Exactly.
I think we're the bad guys.
So they literally had to make a decision. Like, do they side with the person who would give them magic items and money, but have that on the conscience that they led a city of innocent people to their doom and did not help them, gave them up when they just wanted food and just wanted to save their families? Or do they side with the dwarves, elves, or the dwarves, halflings, and gnomes and help them build a escape or to build a fight against it. And ultimately, I was very thankful that they decided to side with the smaller people in this situation, which meant that they did get kicked out of the city and they lost that power that they had, and it would be more difficult. But
yeah,
morally, but,
you know, the cost of morality there. Yeah, for sure. So, like, you just brought, made me think of something. So, because we're talking about building places. Mm-hmm. When you take a stab at a place, do you ever think about plot? Not necessarily, so maybe not story is what I mean there. It's so hard to conflate those two terms because people tend to have very, very different definitions of it, especially in the tabletop scene. But, mm-hmm. like, do you consider the narrative impact of what your adventuring party might do to this place you're making? Because, like, you, so this, like, what you just said here was, like, your placemaking of this city came from the core concept of, I want someone powerful that wants to help my players, but they are a bad guy, like a bad villain.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, is that something that had a ton of weight on the place that you were making, or is it just kind of like your springboard thought?
I think it was my springboard thought, because from that, I created like a bunch of little areas where like they offered salvation and they offered like this type of thing that they're like, oh, well, if you do this, if you work for us, when you're able to retire, we will provide you a home in our area, which is rich and bountiful, and you'll not have to worry about being cared for. Yeah, that's not true. That's mm-hmm. not what happens. There are places where I do base it off of plot or story or narrative for what the characters are wanting to do. And that does change the city tremendously in a way. Because if the characters decide that, like, in the red light district type city, the character... I messaged a character and I said, I have an idea. This is up to you if you want to do it. But he had chosen, and I mentioned this on the show before, but he had chosen to pick one family while the other members of the party chose to pick another family that they wanted to work with. So have you ever heard of like the connections in Shadowrun?
I have not, but I think from context clues, I can kind of figure it out. Is it like it? Go ahead, tell me. You know it. I don't.
It's fine. It's so there's a connection and like loyalty where one is like, I know this person, they can get me certain items, and the higher it is, then the better items I have access to without being ripped off. And the other is loyalty, which is more from acquaintance to friend. Like, this is the highest loyalty. Like, this is my best friend. I can trust them with my life. They won't tell my secrets. They won't sell me out. But like, when you're at a one loyalty, they're not really that trustworthy, but you have something. They know who you are.
Okay.
They might consider it, but they might sell you out too.
Yeah. So it's like almost like you're gamifying like NPC relationships, essentially.
Correct.
Okay.
So the players had X amount of points to spend on their family and with the head of the families. And most of them decided to put like all 4 points in loyalty with the one family. The other person decided to put 3 points with his family and 1 point with the other family, with the group's family. So he could still be participating. So I'm like, hey, question. If you went to these little shindigs and you heard about like an item that was up for grabs and they were making a quest to go steal this item, would you tell your other family?
Mm.
Well, yeah. If you were told to go behind your party's back and get said item, would you do it? Yes. Would you kill for it? Probably. Okay. So you want to be the bad guy today? And he's like, okay. I'm like, I'm gonna be messaging you to tell me some rules. Don't say anything out loud. Just message me the response back. And I basically ran this whole scene where the party was invited to a dinner, and the main, I can't remember names of people, but they decided to work with the black market person, and the other guy decided to work with the drug dealer. No, the sex worker person, I think. Doesn't matter. The other person. So the black market guy invites them over to dinner and is like, guys, I have a problem. Three items that recently I have requested to have people go get. Everybody except for one person has wound up dead. That one person was severely injured. They all have the item lost, and I don't have those items. I'm out of the money. I'm out of people. I need you to figure out what's going on. And then I did a flashback of three scenes of when those dinners were where he gave those jobs out, because I decided that this person is very flamboyant and wants to have parties and invite everybody that he could potentially work with to these parties so he makes them feel well cared for. And then people could overhear the conversation fairly easily. And I pointed out the three individuals that were suspects, not pointing out the player in any of these, because mm-hmm. the character wasn't the NPC didn't want to specifically say he was suspicious of this person in front of this person. So yeah. This gave the players a chance to build reputations and familiarity with these characters and NPCs that they've never actually technically met before in game. Mm-hmm. So when they went to go confront them and slowly learn more information, they could use that against them or to their advantage. So on each of those journeys, I had the one player roll a stealth check and a deception check. And I had the other players roll a insight check and a perception check. And based off those
to see if they would catch it.
Right. Based off those rolls, it would determine how often they noticed he was missing and if they caught him, if they noticed he was lying.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty on par with he got away with it 2 out of 3 times. What finally gave it away was he tried the last person. I did a high low roll. Saw his paws. He was a tabaxi. They saw his black paws.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided to frame someone else who had black paws, but rolled a nat 1 when trying to frame them.
Okay.
And the item fell out of that person's pocket, and the cleric saw it. I thought at this point he was dead. Because I did warn him, like, there is a chance that the party might react negatively to this. Are you okay with that? And he said, that's fine. But the party said nothing. They said absolutely nothing. The cleric picked it up, what the item was, and I said, you stole this off of a bloody person that you killed. Give me a high-low to see if your blood got on it instead.
Brutal.
Because you were also injured in this.
Yeah, and then they'd be able to figure it out with magic.
Mm-hmm. And the person scryed on the blood, and the high-low determined if it went straight to our tabaxi friend
mm-hmm.
or the dead wizard. It went to our tabaxi friend. Our cleric still said nothing. Once they got back to the house, the cleric cast hold person on the tabaxi.
Mm-hmm. To figure out what was going on.
Why are you against us? And they realize he's like, I'm not against you. I just wanted extra money. This person wanted this. And so I still thought, like, they're going to kill him. They're going to turn him in. Instead, they helped him get the items back so they could get double paid.
So they could appease both parties.
Yep.
That brings up a great point is, like, no matter what you world build, there's a very high chance that your players are going to be motivated via money.
100%.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been able to tell you that would have happened at all. Like, I was just like, this is going to go one of two ways. He's going to get away with it, he's going to die. Like, those are the two options. And then I'm like, nope, evidently there's a third option. Fuck. That was really clever. I loved it.
So but I have a quote. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. But and you know, the long story short was that ultimately that whole scene thing ended up robbing that whole family of all of their money. And now they are no longer in power. So they have destroyed part of the city. And they had the choice to take that power for themselves or let other people slowly take it. And they decided to let other people slowly take it because they didn't want people to have any idea that it was them.
And that's like, they just handed you a world building, another world building opportunity. Because like,
yep.
I mean, like as a DM, the world building never stops. So you can build a cool place, but the moment your players interact with it, they're just going to like take a staple or like take a hole puncher and just go to town.
Mm-hmm.
And then leave this cool thing you've made in ribbons. And then you got to figure out how those holes are filled organically.
It's like, oh no, you shredded everything. Let me fix it and paper mache it together. Oh, I made a pinata.
Yeah. I'm like, as a world builder, I'm all for those kind of moments of chaos because I thrive in improv. Like I have run entire encounters and this is not practical by any means. Don't take my advice here. Listeners, please. You'll become a nervous wreck if you do. But like I've run entire encounters in places where I literally had like no more than a 10-word sentence written about a place.
Oh, same.
Yeah, because like it's like kind of like a tip for general role building. You know, like everyone's like, I need to have this place. I need to have all these charts. I need to have all this stuff figured out so that if a player asks me a question, it feels like they're in this place. And like there is space for that, but like sometimes you don't need to do all that. Especially if like you don't know, it comes down to knowing your audience, but like your players might just not, you know, be into that. And then you've wasted a lot of time. So there's like a fine balance.
Yeah. I literally created an entire astral plane city on the top of my head on the spot because I'm like, well, now they're going to offer them something because they saved their life. Well, I guess, do you want to go to the astral plane? Fuck, and I had to make an astral plane.
Yeah, and that's like that's where I think, at least in my opinion, the questions game, like playing the questions game with yourself, is the most flexible thing on the spot. Because like if you give the players one thing that's cool, maybe this is more of like a world building improv tip, but like if your first bite, like your first tagline, like say you're giving your players like a dessert and they take the first spoonful and they like it and your question is based off of their reaction, you can give them something else they'll like and then like do the same kind of thing. So like you land in a place you've never been before, it's like, oh crap, how do I describe this? It's a rolling city across the astral sea. The streets move up and down like waves due to like the cosmic turbulence. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. So what would that do? Oh, they're inside of a tavern. Everyone in the bar lifts their drinks off the table as the cosmic wave rolls through. You just made a cool thing on the spot by asking two questions, and that those two questions will like give you an entire game session.
The other
because your players will be like, this is so cool, and that they might spend 35 minutes messing with the physics of this weird little gimmick you just made.
Yeah, the thing I love to do is Google while I'm playing and the players are role-playing. Literally, like as they're fighting or as they meet these Gith, I'm like, okay, who are the Gith angry with? The Gith are angry with mind flayers. Awesome. Okay, who are the mind flayers from? Oh, Gith or mind flayers are from the astral plane. What is the astral plane as they're having this huge fight scene and they're fighting the mind flayers? Okay, the astral plane has these color pools and blah, blah, blah. So I'm like figuring out a color pool ritual on the spot that they get there. And then I'm like, okay, well, what does the city look like? The Gith have to live somewhere and I can't find anything about a Gith city.
Yep.
What if it's a actual city? What if it's a metropolis? What if it's like a futuristic city? Because time moves faster here than it does on the material plane. And after like an hour on the city, I'm like, you have a chance to go back because it's been 42 years now on the material plane. Do you go back? No. Okay, so after 6 hours, they had the chance again. As I'm describing the city, and I just start describing it, and it's basically New York, but a maze, all black, and the sky is is space equivalency, and everything is just like pristine and clear or in solid black and magical, and the electronics are there, like computers and guns and elevators, but they're controlled by magic and not by electronics. And like, I'm creating this world as we're speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I guess we're in the future, guys. Okay.
This is now a sci-fi game. Cool.
It's been 6 hours. It's been 340 years. Do you want to go back yet? No? Okay. So you're going to spend a whole day here? Okay. It's been 1,000 years.
That's a huge wrench, because if at any point they decide to come back. See, this and that right there, what you just described to me, is the exact reason why most of the my Asperon map for our world is full of tiny little waypoints. And mm-hmm. I would say probably about 10% of them are named, and like 8% of them have a descriptor.
Mm-hmm.
For reasons like that, because like you could build this whole place, and then if the point, like, they're like, oh, you waited another day? That's 2,500 years. Everything I've built is dead.
Well, see, here's the thing, though. There's a place called Sigil with a bunch of doors in it.
Oh, yeah, the city.
Nobody knows where those doors lead to. What if, hypothetically, one of those doors just happened to lead back to the time that they're from?
True. That's a nice easy out.
They have to get to Sigil. Which yeah. is near impossible, and you slowly lose your magic as you get closer and closer to the sigil, so good fucking luck. But, like, also technically they... No, that was right. So, like, you can't teleport into sigil, so it's not like they can just teleport there. They have to walk to get there. First they have to figure it out. So they haven't figured it out yet that that's a possibility. Out of character, they figured out that that's a possibility, but in character, they have not. Mm-hmm. Second, they have to be able to survive long enough to actually get to Sigil without magic. Because it's literally the closer you get, the less magic works.
Third, every wizard dies.
Yes. Third, there's thousands of doors there, and it's protected by the Lady of Pain. Who is a god who does not play around? So, one, how are you going to find the right door?
Yeah, and I think at that point, if I were a player, I would just stay in this cool sci-fi city.
Yeah, it's like, I think, honestly, what's going to happen is they'll stay here for a while. They're level 9 now, I think. I think I jumped them
mid-tier adventure.
Yeah, I jumped them up a little bit because we basically did a year jump where I gave them a year. I gave them like 2 or 3 levels. And I said, in this year, you've learned how to survive this world. You've learned about technology. You can use your boon for whatever you want. Tell me what you've done for the year. Tell me what you used your boon for. Tell me how you've statted your character, aka... Do you know how to use guns now versus you know how to use to mm-hmm. use a crossbow or whatever? And that way they knew what they were doing. It was a lot easier than saying, okay, we're going to spend the next like 12 sessions with you trying to slowly figure out technology. It was just faster this way.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I love to keep harkening back to it, but like every question, whenever you're trying to do any kind of world building, like every question you ask your player is a gold mine. Mm-hmm. Like the more questions they can answer for you, the more like interesting and deep your world is going to get. Like my favorite thing to do is like, I make taverns or I make like businesses and I refuse to name any of the NPCs inside, because the moment they open the door, I'll come up with some wild description for an NPC. And then I'll look the player dead in the eyes and go, tell me their name and how you know them.
Yes.
And then the panic sets in because the script has been flipped.
I literally had an Uncaged Anthology game where they're like, what's the blacksmith's name? And I'm like, Fred?
All right, Fred the blacksmith. I had a game where a player was like, yeah, I work part-time at like this really shitty dive restaurant. I was like, oh, cool. What's it called? And the player was like, Joe's Crab Shack. Yeah, Joe's Crab Shack. And then that became a thing.
Well, what's funny is like at the end of the quest with Fred, who became Frank, because I forget names very easily. they ended up, the quest giver ended up giving some of the money to the blacksmith for helping. And they're like, why did he get money? It's like, because Frank has children. He has 13 children. He needs to feed them.
Yeah.
And they're like, what are the Frank's children's name? I'm like, they're all named Frank, just like George Foreman's kids.
Oh my God.
Because I what didn't want, I was not coming up with 13 yeah. kids' name. Like, they're all Frank. It's all Frank. Everybody's Frank. And then then one of the players who was editing, you know, like, Fred became Frank. And I'm like, I don't care. It's an F mm-hmm. name. It's whatever.
Like, that's like any kind of opportunity like that. Like something I was like, oh my God, I hate when players ask me the names of things and I have to panic on the spot. I'm like, the fact that they're asking shows that they're invested in the place you're making. So like, give it to them. Let them have fun with it because it's supposed to be collaborative.
Okay, so I have a funny story speaking of character name or NPC names. We, in my Friday game, we absolutely adored this one little old lady who made sweet buns and sold them every morning. And we would literally buy her stock and overpay her like 20 times what it was worth. We give her like 20 gold for like a handful of fucking sweet buns. And then she's like, oh, no. She's like, here, take all of them. Like, we just buy her out, which had its own ripple effects. But basically, we never asked her name ever. We just knew her as a sweet bun lady or sweet cake lady. So eventually, the sweet cake lady goes missing. And we're like, what do you mean the sweet cake lady's missing? Where are the Uh-oh. Sweet cakes? And then we go find another sweet cake lady. And we're like, hey, where's the sweet cake lady? She's like, which one? I'm like, I don't know. The one that goes over by the bar.
Did she franchise?
No. It was worse.
Oh, no.
So she's like, oh, you mean... Oh, what is it? Fuck, Mildred? And I'm like, oh, that's her name. Mildred. Okay. Mildred. Yes, Mildred. Where is Mildred? Oh, she had a death in the family. We're like, I'm sorry, what? Well, where does she live? We need to go find Mildred and comfort her. So when we go to talk to Mildred, we find out we had given her so much money that she could afford to buy a house.
Oh, that's so sweet.
She went to go buy the house, but somebody else found out she had a lot of money. And after she put the down payment on, they threatened her grandson and said, if you don't give us this money, your grandson will... Something bad might happen to your grandson. And she had already put the money down on the house.
Oh, no.
So we painted a target on her accidentally. And we found out that the grandson accidentally fell in the well. So we found out who the fuck did that and utterly destroyed them.
That's
and
like
then Mildred became our adopted grandma.
That is so cool. Cause like that's something that I've never really like my games have had elements like that, you know, like the beloved NPC, but like
oh, there's so many fucking beloved NPCs.
The world building never stops because like the moment your players do something, all you have to do is ask a question that garners a consequence. From that action, they're like, okay, yeah, they're overpaying her. What does Mildred do with that money? Oh, she does this. Oh, well, that's weird for the sweet bun lady that the local crime ward loves the food of. Where it's weird that she would just stop making them. Oh, he would look into that. Oh, she has money now. And then like you're just asking questions on the spot, and you've kind of built this thing that now the players are like. Super engaged in and like I care about sweet bun lady, she's our grandma.
Well, we have a shit ton of NPCs actually in that game. So we have Mildred, we have in one shot, because some of us couldn't make it, two people got teleported by the traveler into two little boys to help them find their sister. So they could use their magic and abilities, but they were in these little kids' bodies, basically, trying to save the sisters. And then we realized that that wasn't a dream. Those were real kids. So then we adopted these kids named Trick, Thrill, and Turn, whose mom was a prostitute. So we took those kids in because they weren't being cared for by their mother. And one of them absolutely adores my character. To the point where he's becoming a monk and everything. Then we found my character's relationship in the game is an NPC, which was met through the now we know bad guy who ran the prostitute house, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I met her on a one night that I was invited to go because my character was so naive about anything sexual. And she accepted because she thought she was just getting a massage.
Oh, no.
That's not what she was getting. So that led to a very interesting love story, but it was very sweet ultimately in the end. And she met Skylar. So then we had Skylar, who we adopted. Technically, they're dating, so it's not really adopted. And then we had the tattoo artist who I was like, I will kill for her. And then somebody killed her. So now I have to kill some rakshasas.
You will. Yeah, you definitely will kill for her.
Because she gave me three really badass magical tattoos. I now have a 23 AC. I can punch harder because my fists have like fucking lava in them. And I can run 10 feet faster. So I can run 60 feet normally. So I can move technically 180 feet in a fucking round if I use a step of wind.
That is like, you just like hit on something that I was thinking about. Is like, all the different ways you can world build. Like you have, you know, I have a theme. Like I said earlier, 1920s town. Or like, I have a cool concept about this place. But like, one thing that you can never forget is, you know, no matter how interesting that your world is, no matter how many I've made 10 different taverns and they're all named and I have like all this stuff. Like, your world is populated by people. And mm-hmm. the moment someone walks up to a building and sees a character that has one quirk that sets them apart, the players are already like painting their image of the place. Like, mm-hmm. this little place, you're like, oh, this cute little sweet bun lady, she has a cart, and she sits outside of the flower shop every day, and there's a wreath of flowers behind her. That's all you need, because then you just give this sweet bun lady, like, one little quirk. She says, like, you know, like, every person she gives food to, she compliments them based on one of the flowers behind her. And then, like, that's all, like, you have that. And then you don't need to do any other world building for the shop behind her or even the town square, because your players will always remember that one person that was just there that they got to engage with that was, like, alive. Because, like, no matter how detailed your place gets, it doesn't feel alive until there's people in it to talk to.
Yep. I think that's why I like Dragon Heist so much when we did play it, because we didn't realize how many NPC friends we made until we asked all of our NPC friends to come and help us fight a bad guy.
So you have a literal, like, it's the anime moment at the end where all of the characters get together to fight the bad guy at once.
Pretty fucking much. Like, we're like, yeah. Okay, well, you know this lady who's super powerful and can keep the thing down, so go ask her. She knows mages, so she can invite mages. Those two guys are just idiots, but they owe us 400 gold, so we're going to trade that in and have them come help us and bring some city mm-hmm. guard. But you're a guard, so you could bring more city guard. I'm dating one of the other bad guys, and he has assassins, so we're gonna have him bring some assassins.
Yeah.
And we just like slowly started bringing in all these people to help us with this one mission, just to go steal one item that we needed. And I'm like, holy shit, we know a lot of people in this game.
Yeah.
And it was like, even to the smallest detail of the blacksmith that lived next door who helped us build our actual tavern, were a gay couple that was a fire ganassi and a water ganassi. And the water ganassi was freezing literally during the winter and always sick. So I kept bringing him herbs of hot that he could put in hot tea so he could be warm and feel Aww. Better. And I'm just like, oh my God, how are you doing? Are you feeling better? He's like, yeah, I'm feeling so much better. I need to stay by the fire. And I'm like, this mm-hmm. is so sweet. I love you.
Yeah. Like any players, like even if you put like a total shithead in front of your players, like someone who's just rude and mean all the time, they will love that they will love to interact with that person. They may not like them at all, but like your players will be like, oh yeah, Ralph down the street, that guy who makes hammers and throws them at people, I want to go fuck with him for about 20 minutes just to get on his nerves. Like, it's just like, always remember that, like, you know, for you, this is for you listeners, always remember that you're the cool places you build are filled with people. Your players will grip onto that, and like they'll grip onto that, and they won't let go. And if you take that from them, they'll destroy the thing, the cool things you've built, in the best ways possible, of course. But
yeah,
and that's the kind of cathartic fun of world building. Like you build a cool thing, and then you unleash your players on it, and then watch them destroy it. It's like dropping a Lego model on the ground after you finish building it.
Another fun thing you can do is if you go to a city that the players are actually from or living in, ask them like, give me two or three people that you know fairly well in this town that you see frequently. Maybe it's a tavern, maybe it's your best friend who works down the street, doesn't really offer much, but you might run into them occasionally. Maybe it's an old man who is a homeless person who's really wise and used to be an adventurer, but now they're just like kind of chilling in the alleyway, but they've seen some shit. Like, you create those NPCs, and I did that too with the game. I was like, make an NPC that you became friends with on your 6-month journey. So that fleshed out the story further, because these NPCs, they now had connections in the city that didn't exist before. And I'm not solely responsible for creating these characters in the world that these players live in. Because I'm not going to come up with, oh, hey, you are taking a half-orc boy under your wing because he lost his parents. Like, I'm not going to think of that and force that upon you. You might think of it, though, instead. I can offer suggestions like, oh, well, here's a potential connection. Are you cool with that? But you fill in the details from there.
Well, that reminds me of, like, so that just something like this just happened in one of our recordings for the Gilded Lily. I mean, the content is about a year, or this episode probably won't come out until like December of 2021. Yeah, that's how far ahead we are, guys. But what happened was, like, I had like randomly thrown in a place from the player's backstory that he really didn't want to go back to yet. And he realized out of habit, you realize that you're walking down the street towards your school. And he's like, I'm going to heel turn and immediately realize where I am and go the other way. And I was like, oh, well, why do you go the other way? And he was like, maybe like this route would be the fastest to get me to the elevator up into the city, but I'd have to pass the school. And he's like, so maybe the long route, I get to go meet Sal, the hot dog guy. And I would buy hot dogs from him every day after class. And then we had like a 10-minute scene of them ordering hot dogs from this guy.
Perfect.
But like the player just made up on the spot, and now like there's a living person there that if they ever want a hot dog, they know where to go.
Yeah.
Or exactly. If the hot dog cart is empty, they know someone needs to die.
Yeah, that's 100%. Like, and then that also adds NPCs to the game, and then there's also the chance that like NPCs don't have to be good.
Oh yeah.
So you can have an NPC that's being helpful, but you don't trust them for some reason. Like, you're getting some weird vibe off of them.
You were, like, describing the most recent episode we've released. They've encountered a Fae, yes. And one of the players is very, I'd say, prejudiced against Fae.
Yeah.
He thinks that, like, she's trying to trick them.
Oh, right. I remember. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that happened. And I talked about this in a game or in an episode too, but we had in that Friday game still. I really enjoy this Friday game. I'm very sad if I have to leave this game. In this Friday game, we basically told who ended up becoming the bad guy everything they needed.
Oh no.
To do the things that they did.
Oh no.
And we realized it as it came to a crashing climax at the fucking end. And we're like, oh, fuck. We technically caused this in a very small, minor way. Consistently, we have caused this by trusting her, because the one character worked for her and he died. But his backstory was connected to my backstory because she was the one that helped protect my character's family. Mm-hmm. So I was forced to trust her, even though we didn't get along at all. And it was to the point that when he died, I demanded to know where my family was so I could get them out of there. And she like reassured me that they would be safe and they'd be fine and it's whatever. And I'm like, well, I don't fucking trust you anymore, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, over time, we ended up slowly telling her because she had the power and the people. She knew people that could help. So we brought to her attention, like, hey, there might be Rakshasas in the town. We're worried about that. You might want to look into it. And she's like, how do you know this? Which we're like, I don't really want to tell you, but I guess it's okay. So we mentioned my tattoo artist.
Were they her Rakshasas?
No. I don't know who the Rakshasas are still. But okay. what happened was we mentioned the tattoo artist. And she's like, well, how does the tattoo artist know? And I was like, oh, God. She has visions.
Oh, no.
She saw a vision about Rakshasas. Like, you better not hurt her. So help me God, I will destroy you. And she's like, I would never hurt her. No, she sent somebody to drug her and basically just make her so she was subdued and used her to tattoo magical tattoos on all of her women, all of her people.
No.
And it was hinted at when I was getting my next tattoo, but it wasn't like, I tattooed magical tattoos. It was just like, I like your tattoos because they're different. They're not all the same over and over and over again. And I didn't put that together until after a whole bunch of things happened. And then slowly later, we realized that the Kyber crystals that we mentioned were what was caused the magic tattoo, which is what caused hundreds of people to die, which caused her to gain the power because she literally sucked the life force out of them. Then she destroyed every single Dragonmark house in Eberron because she was mad that her loved one, friend, the player died because the Dragonmark was corrupted. Oof. And we slowly gave her all the information she needed to eventually reach the point where she could just do all of that. And she never showed us who she truly was until we started to go after her. And holy shit, she's terrifying.
That's like, so I encountered a kind of similar scenario in my home game where, again, this is like the 1920s town. I had like built this place, established all these cool things, but I was like, I want one theme I know I want is a character that is interested in them because they seem to know something that he does, like this person doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being the mob boss of the place. But mm-hmm. like they ended up tangled up with him because the heroes stopped a robbery, which I made up a jewelry store on the spot. And I was like, it'd be funny if they stopped a robbery that belonged to the, you know, the mob boss. And then they'd have to do something to get back in his favor so he won't just straight up kill them. But like, he ended up challenging them to, basically they, how do I put it this way? The fighter of the party mm-hmm. wanted to go find a fighting pit. And well, there's only one fighting pit in town. And guess who owns it?
That is the best thing to do is find the fighting pit. It definitely never ends poorly ever.
Yeah, right. So they went in, he beat the fighter, the fighter beat the like the prize fighter for that night, and he won a little bit of money. And then it was at that moment that the mob boss just kind of sidled up to one of them and was like, I know who you are, I know what you did, and now you owe me because you're alive. And they made a deal with them. Because he was like, look, you cost me exactly this much money. Now, I know a prize fight will usually make me just as much.
Mm-hmm.
I want to fight you, all of you, all five, because everyone in here will bet money that I'll win. And he's like, I'll have one of my people bet on you. And they were like, Wait, okay, so he's going to bet that we're going to lose, so they tried to beat him at his own little game. And what it ultimately surmised to is this particular NPC has an artifact that makes him invulnerable to damage that he can see coming.
Oh.
And the gambit was they had to make him bleed in 5 rounds, and there was 5 of them. And they're like, really? That's it? Just make you bleed? And they barely made it. Like, the end of round 5, one of them managed to hit him with an invisible arrow. But afterwards, they earned his respect, and he became an ally, but he's, like, a tentative ally to them because they're under this kind of curse that is, like, protecting knowledge of a very particular event, and one of them mentioned it in his presence, and if you're cursed, it comes out as, like, gibberish. And the crime boss looked at them all, and he goes, what did you just say? And they're like, what do you mean? We talked about... And he goes, what are you saying? And the guy... He has become their ally specifically because they have something that he wants. And they've already fought him in battle, so they know they're terrified of him, so they don't want to turn him down. Right. They're like, we'll be your ally, mostly because we're afraid of you.
I mean, it's got a reason to be an ally.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
like, I love injecting agents that, like, want something from the party.
Yeah.
As opposed to just, like, someone doing bad and the party has to stop it because they feel that they morally should, because that's, you know, sometimes they'll do that, sometimes they'll just fuck off and ignore it.
So, basically, the gist of the conversation today is you can flush everything out starting from nothing, starting from random maps. You can flush things out from NPCs, or you could just wait until your players point in the right direction. If you're stuck, ask your players for help by asking them questions and snowflaking away from that. And honestly, just have fun with it. And if everybody's named Bob, it's okay.
Yeah, your players will not notice. Mine, I literally named 2 changelings Chip and Dale, like the store, and they didn't even... Oh, no, it wasn't that. I was doing, like, a chipmunks thing. And they literally didn't notice until the NPCs were killed. They were like, wait a minute.
That's perfection. Naming them Chip and Dale.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. So, on that note, because it's been an hour and 20 minutes.
Ew, it has. Look at that.
It's been a fun conversation, though. Where can everybody find you?
So you can find us in a couple places. We are mainly on Twitter at Tales of Asperan. That's Asperran. You can tell I've said this for every mid-roll of our entire show.
Yes.
We have a website. It's www.toapodcast.com. And aside from that, our podcast, which is a 5th edition actual play, we run 2 campaigns on 1 feed. One is about small town young adults who are very naive, and it's kind of like their random adventures on the road. And the other one is a show about 4 wizards who dropped out of college and became pirates on a coast filled with dinosaurs.
That's a much better career anyway.
Yeah, right? You get all the good stuff. And those you can find us on Podbean or, you know, we're on a public network, so our public podcast feed, so most podcatchers will have it. But we also have everything linked in our Twitter as well.
Yeah. Also, I edit for you. Well, at least the first round. You do all the cool stuff.
Yes. For any of you who don't know this, Nikki is our initial editor for a lot of the more recent Tales of Asperon episodes, because I found out that I don't have enough time to edit 2 shows. I was dying, and Nikki has been our savior.
I will be your savior, too, for money.
Yeah, pay her. Nikki's work is great. It's worth every penny. She's saved me, like, 5 hours per episode of editing that I would normally, like, have to slog through. Between that and recording, I had 1 night a week free, and now I have, like, 3, so.
Yay. You too can have 3 nights a week free, probably. Maybe asterisk that might not be guaranteed.
For additional endorsement, my partner just yelled from across the room, "It's so lovely."
You're welcome.
She says you're welcome.
Awesome. So check out all the links down below and definitely go check it out. I do get the privilege of listening to the story ahead of time, but I did listen to it before that, and it is fantastic. So definitely check out both shows. And for more tips and tricks on how to world build, I'm sure we have some other, I still have some other episodes on here. You can also check out that YouTube channel, because coming eventually, I don't know when, I don't yet, well, it'll probably be this year, but eventually we will have the Loros episodes coming out, where we will build an entire world from scratch in 5th edition, and then translate that to other open gaming license worlds as well. It's going to be an interesting ride.
That sounds great.
I'm excited. But you can find me at Beholder to No One. Also, it's officially been announced that I am part of the podcast network Geekspective. So please go check out Geekspective as well and all the podcasts that are related to that. And if you want to help support us, you can find us on Patreon, and you can help make sure these shows, as well as Dice Before Dawn and Sound Control RPG, continue thriving.
Can I issue a tiny world-building challenge to your listeners?
Yes.
It was a random thought I had while we were writing. Listeners, there's a tiny town. In the middle, there is a well. The well produces alcohol when you put buckets down it. Tell me why, or tell us why. I feel like that could be fun.
Ping both Tales of Asperon and Beholder to No One on Twitter and tell us why the well does this thing.
Why does it make alcohol, and why does everyone hate it?
Or love it?
Or love it, yeah. Could be a turf war over the well, but, you know, figure that out. Let's see what they come up with. This could be cool.
Right. Keep being awesome. Thanks for being here. Chat with you later. Bye.